You can lose, but I know how you love to win. Break my band down and pick me like a javelin.
Hey out there, everybody. As you can tell by the incoherent ramblings of Eric Borg, it must be time for another episode of Rock Under Fire.
Yeah.
It's very quiet.
This is a quiet
It's just
one,
me
man.
And Mike tonight.
This is going to be another like really quiet, subdued, laid back, we all drank too much last night
mm-hmm.
type of show.
I might set something on fire. I don't be so sure it's going to be laid back. What happened last night? Pat? What happened to Pat now?
Well, we're missing Pat. He's a casualty of last night. And we were going to have Tracy also sit in with us because Tracy had a really good topic. And the topic we were originally going to do, well, you know, we're going to postpone that and do it another time. You know, they just went down in flames. couldn't make
alcohol fueled flames.
Yeah, something like that. But so we're missing two people tonight. And I'm barely holding on myself here. The show is yours, man. You can run with it.
I got a lot to say, man. I'm not worried about it. We've been doing this all our lives. Me and you sitting in my living room.
Yeah.
Talking about music like we've always done.
Right.
Right? Now we have no topic in particular, but that's okay. I went to a rock concert since our last episode a couple weeks ago. It was at the PNC Arts Center, which we're all familiar with if you're from New Jersey, and I saw Alice Cooper in Deep Purple.
Cool.
Deep Purple. Not a big fan of either one, are you?
No, I like Alice Cooper.
You like Alice?
I just need to get more enthusiasm for the show. I got to tell myself that we've now hit record and we're now. It's now. This is the show.
This is so real,
bro. I need to get into show mode, and it's taking me a while.
No problem, man.
Let me cut you off really quick for anybody new as joining us, and this is your first episode. God help you. But you'll find us on rockunderfire.com. Go to our website. You'll find us on iTunes and you'll find us on YouTube. If you're listening on iTunes, please leave us a rating and review. We could all use some aspirin, but we could also use your help and your support with the podcast.
Not me, man. I'm feeling good.
Good.
I'm not a drinker, though.
You're doing better than us. I think Pat has it the worst.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alice and Deep Purple. Deep Purple's the headliner, which surprised me a little bit because I always thought Alice was just a bigger name on the rock and roll spectrum than Deep Purple.
That's a good question.
That's a good question, right?
But you know, Deep Purple, I don't know. That's a tough one, man. Who should be the headliner? I would say Alice Cooper.
I would think so too, but that was not the case. We wrestled with the same question last year.
Deep Purple is not. Is there without Richie Blackmore?
Right.
You know, who wants to see
which? Yeah, I know, man.
Deep Purple without Richie Blackmore.
Blackmore's my guy, man. Yeah, exactly. But this is the question we wrestled with last year when Cheap Trick and Joan Jett played together, huh? Who's a bigger fish in the sea of rock and roll, Joan Jett or
Cheap Trick? No question.
I like Cheap Trick a lot more than Joni, but just in terms of popularity, it's not.
And who played first last year?
Cheap Trick.
See, that's crazy. I mean, I like Joan Jett. I like Joan Jett.
Yeah, we both do.
Love her first. Three albums.
Yeah, we love her.
But, nah, man, Cheap Trick definitely needs to go on after Joan Jett.
I would think.
All right.
Twas not the case. All right, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Alice in Deep Purple. I have some of their records. Like them, right? But I'm happy to report what we usually do here on Rock Under Fire is a kvetch about our rock and roll heroes and how low they've sunk. God knows Rob Halford and Paul Stanley have taken it on the chin on this show. Guys that just can't hold a note anymore. I'm happy to report that was not the case with both Deep Purple and Alice, man. They both came off really well, man. I can't sit here and tell them.
Now, Ian Gillan was singing,
playing.
Right?
Ian Gillan was singing.
Okay.
And you know what?
All right.
Not the old Ian Gillan, but you know what? He didn't embarrass himself.
Yeah,
like
he
I've
could get
it.
Up there with dignity,
right.
man, and put on a show, right. whereas everybody else kind of, like you're, it's painful to watch.
Like I've seen Ozzy and Rob Halford embarrass themselves.
It is
these
painful
guys.
To watch Kiss now, man.
Yeah.
It is so painful to watch them.
Yeah.
Anybody tell me that Kiss still sounds great is just delusional. Fucking delusional.
I agree. Yeah.
In total denial.
But, I mean, Alice was never known for lung busting vocals. You know, he sings with the kind of style that allows you to age with dignity. But I mean, he really, really sounded pretty darn good. He sounded like the old Alice. As a matter of fact, he's got a new single out that the local college radio stations are playing a lot. I forget the name of it, but it's written from the point of view of a teenage girl. Sounds like the old Alice, you know? Mm-hmm. Really good. And again, Ian Gillan, okay. But again, didn't embarrass himself, man. No, he's not singing Space Truckin' anymore the way he used to. But he did all right. He did all right. And Steve Morse, who's playing instead of Richie Blackmore, did all right, you know? Everybody left there satisfied. You know, they got their money's worth.
So, yeah.
Bravo to you guys.
Well, I'm glad they finally made it this way, Deep Purple, with a big venue. You know, I don't know when the last time they played around here. I mean, you never hear about Deep Purple coming around here.
Guess not, huh?
But, you know, interestingly enough, my favorite era of Deep Purple, and, you know, being, you know, we're usually purists with all of our favorite bands.
Mm-hmm.
The early
right.
stuff,
right.
the 70s, the
sure.
60s, the first five
Original
albums,
members.
This, the first five
yeah.
albums. My favorite era of Deep Purple is when they reunited in the 80s. Perfect Strangers, man. That's my album.
Mm-hmm.
House of Blue Light. That's not a great, it's nowhere near as good as Perfect Strangers, but it was, you know, it was a worthy follow-up.
I actually don't have the Perfect Strangers album. I should get that, huh? I'm missing out.
It's not a masterpiece, but it happens to be my favorite Deep
really?
Purple record.
That's,
yeah.
that's saying a lot.
Knocking at
lot.
Your back door.
Oh,
the,
all right.
The title track is
I know that tune.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, they
brilliant.
Did. They did it that night. Did an excellent rendition, man. There's a couple of crescendos, man. A couple of high points, man.
Gypsy's Kiss, rocked, I think, is the underlooked gem of Deep Purple. Of their catalog is a song called Gypsy's Kiss, which is very uncharacteristic of Deep Purple. It's more in line with what Richie Blackmore was doing with Rainbow
right.
and Jolyn Turner.
Okay.
Like if you listen to like when Jolyn Turner joined Rainbow and they got into, you know, Straight Between the Eyes and Difficult to Cure, Bent Out of Shape, Spotlight Kid, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Right.
It really resembles that.
Okay.
And it almost seems like when Deep Purple got back together in 84, Richie was kind of still writing for Rainbow a little bit.
Mm. It was 84.
Yeah. Well, what else? What else is going on? We lost Walter Becker in the past week. And
yeah.
I was hoping that, you know, we were going to talk about this with Pat because Pat being the he obviously loves Steely Dan much more than we do.
Yeah, he does.
But we both love Steely Dan.
We both do.
What can you say about Walter Becker? I'll keep my end of it brief. He was just, I think, for somebody that was a brilliant, masterful guitarist that he was, and the fact that he's very often, especially in a studio, kind of opted to sit back and let other guitarists take leads.
Session for guys.
For the and he would go through guitarist after guitarist until he found the right guy to play the solo, because he heard something before, like he heard an entire record in his head, him and Fagan,
right?
They heard
right.
an entire record in it in their heads before they played a note, so they knew exactly what they wanted.
Why is a brilliant musician like him though calling on session
for him,
guitar players?
I don't know his mindset. I don't know his work ethic. They were a very mysterious outfit.
Mm.
They never toured through the 70s and 80s. They just kind of...
I don't know if I knew that. They never toured in the 70s and the 80s?
No, they started out as a band. They had, you know, Jeff Skunk Baxter,
right.
who you know from...
Gene's old album.
For, you know,
and
the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah.
And they played around 1974. Then they just kind of dispersed, and they would put out records through 75, 76, 77, but they would always get session players.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always Becker and Fagan. So they remained this mysterious thing that would turn out an album a year until 1977. They put out Asia. It becomes huge. 3 years go by, you know, and then they release Gaucho. And then they disappear for 13 years. And then they finally tour again in 93.
Did they break up?
I don't know if there was really nothing to break up. The band didn't exist. There was no Steely Dan. It was Becker and Fagan releasing records under the name Steely Dan with session players, different session players every time.
You said they disappeared for 13 years, you said.
There was no Steely Dan record.
No records. Yeah. No records, no tour.
There was
so
no...
They broke up.
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah, I guess you could say they broke up. Yeah. Hmm. They broke up. You know, and Fagan was releasing solo records.
Right.
So... You know, but my point being that Becker saw the art as more important. You know, he sacrificed his own ego for the good of the art.
Right.
You know, what would be the best guitar work for this song? You know, and he knew that, you know, and maybe he couldn't get it himself, so he kind of waited. And this solo, that solo, this guy, that guy, you know, and especially with Asia. Listen or watch the, there's a documentary on the making of Asia. And it really,
yeah, you're hurting, man. I can tell
you. It gives you a sense. It gives you a sense of how they worked in the studio.
I don't get that though, man. He's such a brilliant musician, man. I mean, I can't see him needing to call on guys to do things that he couldn't. It just strikes me as weird. I get you not having an ego and all that, but him looking for things that he couldn't do himself. Okay.
Not everybody needs the spotlight. I think kind of like. You know, why does Woody Allen star in some of his movies, and why does he just sit back and direct some of his movies? Even the movies that Woody's not in, there's a Woody Allen character. Yeah. You know the Woody Allen character in the movies that he's not in. So it's just sometimes I guess the artist feels that it would be better off if the art were transported and translated through a different voice. So that's, I guess, the closest I could get into Walter Becker's mindset when he's creating his art.
Yeah. Bad year for our boy Pat, though. I mean, Steely Dan is his band. He loses Walter Becker. He loses Chris Cornell, his other guy. The Allman Brothers died. All Pat's rock and roll heroes are kicking one by one. You got to feel bad for Pat. I just want to know what Steely Dan's going to do from here on in. Is Donald Fagen going to wrap it up? I mean,
no.
it's just him and Becker, Steely Dan.
Well, I think the thing was they did release two records in the past 15 years. I think the most active decade as far as Steely Dan as a touring entity, the most busy active decade of their existence has been the last 10 years.
Yeah, which struck me as weird when you said they didn't used to tour. They never stopped touring.
They've toured more in the past 10 years than they did in the past 40 years. So what else? Did anybody else die? I think we have a death every show. There's a death.
Yeah.
We have to talk about somebody dying during every freaking show.
In the music world, no deaths, I don't think. No deaths, man.
So you got a big bag over here.
I got a
bag. Vintage vinyl.
I got a brand new bag of tricks.
We are located in New Jersey, so anybody knows vintage vinyl, anybody knows New Jersey, because vintage vinyl very often is the place to put Central Jersey on the map.
Yeah, if you're a record enthusiast, a rock enthusiast, and you're from New Jersey, you know vintage vinyl. We're fortunate to have this very excellent record store right down the street from us. Matter of fact, Mike and I grew up on the very same street, you know, that where vintage vinyl is. And I still remember the tangible excitement, man. What was it, 84 when they opened, and we knew there's a record store coming down the street, man. How excited we were, you know. Not many of these type of places exist, I don't think, in towns anymore. In the cities, hell yeah. Vintage vinyl, man. We'll give them a free plug. But all our lives, we've been going to vintage. I would say, like, fucking A, man. 75% of my music collection came from vintage, dude. Like, the greater portion of it comes from vintage. You go to this place, and they have huge bins full of used vinyl and used discs. You better believe, for 20 years, I cleaned up on all the vinyl records, man, during the age of the CD, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's 2017 and the script has flipped. Everybody wants their vinyl, and now there's a lot of quality CDs to be had for a very, very cheap price, man. You know, for if that's what you're into, very cheap. You know, so that's what I'm doing. I go there now and I look through the CDs and get things I don't have for $3 and $5 tops. The reason I'm talking about that is because every now and then you have an unforgettable trip to the record store where you just clean up. You get several really, really good titles. You may not realize it at the time. That's the case tonight. It took me a good month to realize what a great trip I had, man. I took a chance on a couple of different things, and I liked them all. I got 3 CDs, I think, and 2 records. 5 for 5. I love all of them. So I'm going to reach into the bag at random here and talk about a few of them if you want. We got nothing else to talk about, right?
That's right. I want to reiterate, we don't have a topic tonight, so this is where we're at. So,
what do you want me to pull out first, a CD or a record? Tell me.
Save the good stuff for last. Let's do the CDs first.
Okay. You want CDs first?
I'm not, okay. Because I've kind of rediscovered vinyl, as you know, over the past year, and CDs are just like the least...
Right.
Most interesting things to me right now.
Well, it's more about the titles, you know, and the bands.
All right, yeah.
Okay, reaching into the bag at random, and I pull out the first thing we have here is Primal Scream, Evil Heat. I've talked about this band, Primal Scream, in the past. One of the more underrated bands, I think. Underrated. And Primal Scream, I think, suffers, like a lot of underrated bands do, from not having a hit song.
Tell me about Primal Scream again, because I know nothing about them. I couldn't tell you where they start, where they end, where they whatever.
Let me ask you something first, bro. When I say Primal Scream, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
John Lennon.
Very good, bro. Good. Can't get nothing by you, bro. Tell the crowd about Primal Scream.
Primal Scream Therapy was kind of like the en vogue form of dealing with your psychotic issues in the early 70s, and John Lennon was one of its victims for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear John going through the therapy in some of his actual recordings, Mother, to name one, and the ending of Cold Turkey. So enough on that.
You know, you're out there in the crowd, you know, Mother. Mama, don't go. Primal Scream Therapy. Scream your issues out. Just begging for a band to be called Primal Scream, right? What a great band name. Nevertheless, the band Primal Scream is very underrated, and I don't think they had a hit song. I think the closest they came to a hit, they had a song called Rocks. Get your rocks on.
When did they come out? Like when did they kind of first appear on the song?
80-something, early 80s. I think they started in 82. You know?
All right, so I'm really clueless on this group.
I don't know that this is... that's what I want to talk about, too. I don't know if Primal Scream is a group that you would love. They have one or two... Well, here's the thing.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're not... You know, they're not an obscure band by any means, man. Underrated, though. All right.
Well, anybody notable in them? In the band?
The most notable person is the very magnetic singer, Bobby Gillespie, who actually, interesting fact, started off as the drummer from Jesus and Mary Chain. Mm. Got out behind a kit and redefined himself as a front man for what would be his band, Primal Scream. But that's about it. At the time, where this this tune Rocks, which I guess is not ringing a bell to you, Mike, had some airplay on MTV. The video
were they one of those like 120 minutes bands?
Yeah,
postmodern MTV.
Yeah, but not, okay. but not arty, not artsy fartsy in a Cure type of way. You know, straightforward rock and roll. Actually, I kind of rejected it at the time because I really, really thought it was a Stones ripoff. I was like, wow, these guys are total Exile on Main Street, Stones era ripoff band. Don't dig them. However, I would give them another chance, thanks in part to prodding by Mike Minucci and who else? Johnny Andrew. We're big fans of Primal Scream. I took a chance on them. I said this once before earlier on a podcast of ours. They released an album called Screamadelica, an album that just drips with love and vulnerability. Just a gorgeous record, man. I would later find out, though, that was very much the exception and not the rule. They're not a band that sings about love. They really changed. They really morphed. They really morphed from a rock and roll band playing guitar to a very, very much a synth-based band, almost electronic. That's where I think they would really lose you. A lot of their stuff is downright electronic and violent in nature, not peaceful. There's a song on this one. The
it's
Lord.
It's not like My Bloody Valentine, is it?
No. The sound is different than My Bloody Valentine. All right. No. The Lord Is My Shotgun. They've got other songs, Kill All Hippies, If It Moves, Kill It, stuff like that.
I already don't like them.
Yeah. Violent in nature. Yeah. Right?
Not my thing.
No, I don't think you would love Primal
Scream. I'm a hippie.
I recommend them highly to our listeners. You know, you're a fan of rock and roll. You got to give this band a try. I have here my ticket stub, man. I'm looking right at it. Monday, April 21st, 2003. I went to see Primal Scream all by myself and was really blown away, honestly. I mean, really blown away. Bobby Gillespie, again, the singer, was magnetic and gorgeous. I actually went back the second. When do I ever do this? Went back the second night. I was like, that's so fucking good. I'm going back tomorrow night.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. Good band. Worth getting into. What, you want me to reach into the bag for another CD now?
Yeah.
Another CD?
Let's see what you got here.
Oh, Parliament Funkadelic. Mothership Connection is a classic.
Yeah.
Right? That's sitting there for like $3. How can I resist? Right? George Clinton. You have any of this stuff, Parliament?
Not currently, no.
Not currently?
No.
Everything I had cassettes.
Connor and Kevin, my two buddies, man. Love Parliament, man. Love Parliament.
Be My Beach.
Uh-huh. Well, you know what? You're not really into the funk genre. It's not your... I wouldn't call that your thing.
No.
You're not a funk guy. No. Even though you like James Brown.
I like that.
You like that?
I like Parliament, man. I love Maggot Brain.
Right.
You know?
You do love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a Mothership Connection, an absolute classic. How can I resist? Rather have it on vinyl, yeah. But for $3, I will take this CD. Absolutely. Very good stuff. For my money, it's not going to make me forget James Brown or even Rick James. I think when you're talking about funk, those are my two big ones. You know, James Brown. I like Rick James, too. I'm a big fan of Rick James' records. This is good. This is good. But not on the level of those two aforementioned artists, I think. No disrespect to George Clinton. They're a live band, right? Let's face it. I mean, I've never seen Parliament.
Like I said, the only ones I had Maggot Brain and Let's Take It to the Stage.
Right.
And both of them I liked.
Reaching into the bag for another, for the last of the three CDs. Hawkwind. Do re mi fa sol la ti do.
You play some Hawkwind.
Yeah, that's...
I think of Neil from the Young Ones.
Oh, Neil from the Young Ones talks about Hawkwind?
Yeah.
Does he really?
Mm-hmm.
Weird title for a heavy metal band, Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti. All right, dude. Those are like musical notes we were taught in the first grade or something.
Right, Miss Trites.
Miss Trites taught us that. Hawkwind. Dear listener, you may know Hawkwind's big claim to fame is being the original band of Lemmy from Motorhead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here at Rock Under Fire, we're not interested in bullshit. We're not going to bullshit you, man. We're just going to tell you the truth. In that note, I want to tell the truth and freely confess that I really know very, very little at all about Lemmy or Motorhead. I never listened to them. Mm-hmm. Not that I disliked them. I just never tried. I mean, we all know Ace of Spades. Speaking of that...
It was always too abrasive for me.
Okay.
Mad respect for Lemmy.
Too abrasive, but this is coming from a guy who also loves Maiden and Priest, so...
Yeah... Yeah. When I think of a good analogy, I'll tell you. I'm running on 40% capacity here tonight.
It really is so hard to like make criticism like, oh, it's too sensitive for me, because you could turn around and point to a sensitive album that you love. So you just you like it or you don't, man.
I'm glad you're kind of picking up the... This is like the stick show tonight, and I'm perfectly fine with that because I get to sit here and eat cookies.
Good, because I usually want to talk more. I can't get in, so I'm just going to, I want to open up my mouth and spill all my mental vomit onto you guys. Mm. Hawkwind is the original band of Lemmy. I don't know anything about Lemmy. I do remember our good friend Mike Nirenberg, who appeared on like episode 4 or 5, liked Hawkwind. I remember him talking about Hawkwind. Okay. And then I saw the very brilliant documentary about Lemmy. Did you see the Lemmy documentary that came out 5 years ago now?
Yeah.
I think it was just called Lemmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, really? Okay. I see that. And, all right, I want to know more now. Now you got my attention. Mm. You know? Based on that, here I am at Vintage Vinyl. I got Primal Scream in my hand. I got Parliament Funkadelic. I'm flipping through. Snack! There it is. Hawkwind. Snatch that shit like a snake snatches a mouse. I'm thinking at the time it was the first Hawkwind record. I was wrong. It turns out to be the third Hawkwind release. Mm-hmm. I love this, man. It took a couple listens. I really, really like this, dude. Mm-hmm. Hard rock. Call it heavy metal if you want.
I could see liking that more than Motorhead.
I can of all these, bro. This is one of the two that I could see you liking.
Yeah,
I could see you liking this, dude.
Yeah.
Hard rock, absolutely. Interesting thing about them, though, we're talking about sprawling songs, sprawling 4 to 5 minute songs. Interesting, though, in the age of Led Zeppelin, no guitar solos, really. There's no guitar solos in this. It's just, a couple of guys playing guitar. They have an excellent riff, and they sit on it while the bass player seems to be doing more moving around than anybody else.
Right.
Right?
And that's Lemmy, right?
Yeah. Interesting, though, in the age of Zeppelin, these bare-chested, long-haired dudes not playing a guitar solo is an interesting take.
Guitar solos didn't really become fashionable till the 80s. I mean, obviously, guitar solos. Yeah, it wasn't like guitar solos for the sake of guitar solos, man.
It's the age of Sabbath and Zeppelin is a guitar solo in every song.
Yeah, but it was more rhythmic based. It was like those guitarists, Jimmy Page, man. It was more about the riff.
Yeah,
they were those guitar. You know, Smoke on the Water, Black Dog. It was about the riff.
Right.
It wasn't about here comes a guitar solo, man. That kind of began with Eddie Van Halen. Where it was like, okay, here comes a big guitar solo, flashy guitar solo, man.
Right.
Let's see who could play faster now.
Right.
All that bullshit.
Right. Yeah. At any rate.
But there were some, that doesn't mean that there were no guitar solos. Every mm-hmm. fucking song had a guitar solo in the 70s, man.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as demanding as it was in the 80s.
You didn't have to fucking have.
Where every fucking metal band was judged by how fast their guitarist
was. Yeah, dude. Even Kiss suffered from that. Mark St. John is probably the worst guitar player Kiss ever. All right, never mind Kiss.
We're done with Kiss. Fuck Kiss.
Yeah, for the actually, I hate to tell you this, but we're not.
I saw why. Peeking out of the bag.
Yeah, it's peeking out of the bag, man.
We can't get rid of them.
We can't, man. Regarding Hawkwind, I thought it was interesting. There's no solos. But you know what? Twinged with a little bit of psychedelia. Meanwhile, you hear like, blip. God bless you. Blips and beeps. And there's definitely a feeling of outer space in this music. It's space rock. Psychedelic space rock. You know, astronomy is there. Right? So that's how it summed them up, man. Like, mildly trippy, heavy space rock. One final interesting thing about them is that they're still going. They released an album in 2017. I looked on Wikipedia. I couldn't believe the depth and breadth of their catalog is incredible, man. This is all I've got.
So did they never stop?
They never stopped, apparently. Even when Lemmy bounced, they just kept on trucking. And who knows, man? This could be the beginning of a love affair with Hawkwind, man. I know I like this record a lot. And you might like this. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what year did this come out?
This is 72,
I think. See, I'm the year guy. I need to know. Yeah, first thing I ask, what year did it come out?
Yeah. 72, I think.
I don't care what it is, man. What year did it come out? Whatever, the movie. Did you ever read this book? Did you ever see that movie? Did you ever listen to that record?
Mm-hmm.
What, first question, man. What fucking year did it come out?
I did that, too, but especially with artists that have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
If you got the album from 92 or 72, I'll take the 72 one. Thank you. And take my chances.
Right.
So that's it for the CDs. Primal Scream, Hawkwind.
All right.
And Parliament Funkadelic. Now, we reach into the bag.
Like I said, I saw something Kiss-related in there.
Kiss is going to come up first.
After this show, I don't want to mention Kiss for like another 20 episodes. Oh, I have that.
Let's do this first. Yeah,
I have that one.
You have this one?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
It's, it isn't great. The Metro is on there, and that's when I bought it. I bought it for $1, and I bought it specifically for the Metro because this was back when we would make mixtapes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was before downloading and before the internet.
Yeah.
And I remember for a party, I was making a mixtape, and I was like, I really love that Berlin song, The Metro, that used to be on MTV, pre-Top Gun Berlin.
Oh, was The Metro on MTV?
Yeah.
I don't recall that.
Yeah, and I remember going through used vinyl and found that record.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought it, and I recorded the song, and I probably listened to that. I played that album in the last 6 months. I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Borderline love it. Yeah, as Mike said, next up to play is Berlin. The album was called Pleasure Victim. As Mike said, you probably know Berlin from their smash hit from the 80s, Take My Breath Away. But you would be remiss, dear listener, if you judged them based on that exclusively. I'm chilling out with my girlfriend, Nicole. We're cooking a gumbo in the kitchen, and we have music on in the background, Pandora station, and this song comes on. I'm like, what the fuck is that? That's pretty fucking cool. All right, go out. The Metro, yeah, by Berlin. Huh, that's pretty cool. I took note of that, right?
Yeah.
I immediately put them on my wish list, my musical wish list. Huh, check out this Berlin, man. You know, I mean, I shouldn't judge them so quickly. There I am, a month ago, vintage vinyl. Going through the vinyl. Bam, there it is. Snag, thank you. I got the Berlin Pleasure Victim. After a couple listens, I love it, dude, from top to bottom, bro. Very, very solid album. Very 80s, but it's dark, neon, and creepy. There's something creepy about this record. Mm-hmm. You know, even the cover's kind of creepy. You got this movie starlet with a slit throat.
That's Terry Nunn, I think.
Who?
Terry Nunn, the singer of Berlin.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, she's there with apparently a slit throat. And there's a guy looking at her as if she's on a TV screen. Darkly creepy, this music. But yet somehow still rocks.
Oh, it looks like Donald Trump.
Somehow. You think? I think it looks like Tom Cruise.
It looks like Donald Trump.
All right. This is why we need visuals, bro. It'll be so cool right now if our listeners had this to look at.
Maybe
you know,
I'll put that in the embedded video. Like I'll make that our image for the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been saying that. We need more imagery. Right? I don't know what more I can say about this, man, but I like this record a real lot, man. Speaking of Nicole, we made like... Nicole had this record, man, Piano Boogie, and it looked really cool. I tried to steal it from her. Like, no, you ain't getting that. I was like, this looks like a cool record you got. Anyway, I found Berlin. I knew Nicole wanted this record, too, because we discovered it at the same moment. That same moment, we were like, wow, Metro, what's that? So I called her. I said, okay, man, I got Berlin Pleasure Victim, the album at Metro on it. I'll make you a great fucking deal, man. I will trade you this Berlin record for that Piano Boogie straight up right now. She said no. So you know what? She should have took it, man. The Piano Boogie record, not as good as we anticipated. Berlin Pleasure Victim turns out to be a brilliant record. I won that deal, man, right? And I ain't going back. She's not getting this record from me. Pry this record out of my hands. I love it.
That is Berlin Pleasure Victim.
Yeah.
From 19...
What year is that?
Is it 81 or 82?
Check that out, man. It's one or the other, man.
It's early MTV, I know that.
Yeah.
82.
Mm.
And I remember seeing that on MTV a lot. I loved it. Again, it was like 4 years before Top Gun and that whole...
Right.
Ballady thing that they did.
Right.
Just kind of turned me off of Berlin.
Right. You know? Yeah, sure. Hey, give it another spin, though. You might like other songs on this record, dude. You might.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I played it recently.
Right. All right.
I like it. I don't love it.
I hear you. I like it a lot. This brings us to reaching into the bag. Final record. Can't get away from Kiss, no matter how hard we try. Here it is. Peter Criss' solo album, Out of Control. I did not know this album existed for most of my life. I'm a total Kiss freak. I wasn't aware of this album. I guess you were.
Yes.
This is not the Peter Criss solo album released in 78 with the other guys with his portrait on the front.
That's Although I think it's much better than his 78 solo album.
You do, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. I believe this is what, bro? Like maybe 6 months after he got the boot from Gene and Paul?
This was 1980, I believe. I believe this is 80. Still on Casablanca.
It is.
Co-produced by Stan Penridge. So he was still writing with, he was still working with Stan Penridge, who was a childhood friend. By Myself is a good song. It's not a bad album.
It's not a bad album.
I have it in my hands now, so I'm just kind of looking. I'm just, for anybody listening, I'm just kind of looking at the credits. I don't own this album, but I know this album.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. It's all yours.
Yeah. This is, Yeah, I think like 6 months after he gets kicked out of Kiss. It's definitely a Kiss product, man. It's
I would the, think that Vinnie Poncia would have worked with it.
Vinnie Poncia's name's not on it?
Is not, I don't know that he's associated with this album because he was working with Kiss at the time. So when Peter's recording this, Kiss is putting together Unmasked. Okay, recorded March through July 1980. So, and Unmasked is released in May of 1980. So this kind of, yeah, I don't think he had anything to do with this record.
No, that's surprising. Definitely a Kiss associated product. You know, you got the Casablanca label. Correct me if I'm wrong. That font, ain't that the Love Gun font? That might be the Love Gun font. Am I wrong?
No, that's a little. That's a little more rounded and bubbly. It's a little more bubbly.
A little more bubbly than the Love Gun font.
The Love Gun font is more sharper, has sharper angles.
Yeah. You're right. You're right now. Nevertheless, man, as unbelievable as it is, I don't know that I've ever motherfucking seen this record with my own two eyes until I saw this copy, dude.
No, I've definitely seen that at Kiss conventions back in the 80s.
At the expos. Have you ever seen this record in a record store sitting there? I can't.
We talked about that, and I had that album in my hands probably the day that you bought it.
Right.
So I kind of saw it, and I passed on it. And
I've been going this, again, Vintage Vinyl. I've been going there for 25 freaking years. I don't know that I've ever seen this sitting there. So because of what I perceive as a relative rarity and because of my love for all things Kiss, bam, I just grabbed this thing. The best thing about it is the cover. That cover is a winner, man. Right, you can see it from across the room. It's got a old school jukebox with exploding 45 records coming out of it, with shards of glass and shrapnel going into people's bodies. Everybody's running out of the way. Fantastic. The blonde on the far left is Deborah Jensen. That's the girl that would be Peter's second wife.
Right.
After listening to Lydia yammer on for 10 years, I don't blame him. He went for her. With his three-pronged approach of bragging about being in Kiss, ostentatious displays of wealth, cars, and watches, and the third prong was keeping her completely coked up.
I side with Lydia, man. Peter was a douche.
I'm not denying.
I've talked at length with Lydia about this on our show and off our show, right, man.
Well, me and Lydia don't get along, so. But...
I did some damage control for you with Lydia.
Yes,
so
you did.
She still loves you.
Oh, good. All right. Well, if she likes me, it's okay. No. Nevertheless, if you read Peter's book, man, what a tempestuous relationship he had with this woman, Deborah Jensen, man. Just a coke fueled insanity, man. And that is her. Musically, it reminds me a lot of his 78 Kiss record. You said you like this one better, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I spun it twice, I think, and I don't know if I'll play it a third or fourth time. It might be a long time before I do. It's kind of in the same vein. I don't even know how you would properly describe this music. I gave Peter credit last time for having the balls to do what he wants to do and play the music he loves. Yeah, I just get a feeling of a cheesy lounge music somehow, you know? And this, to me, is not a real departure from that other record. Mm. It's Out of Control, it's called. Peter Criss, Out of Control. No one really loses control, though.
You got to lose control before you take control.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful-looking record. I'll put it right in the front so everybody can see the cool cover.
It's very pleasing to the eye.
Definitely pleasing to the eye.
Right? It looks almost like, I mean, it's like cartoonish.
Yeah, it's a cartoon drawing. Yeah.
Kind of.
I'm glad I brought it. I won't be bringing it back. I think it's an unusual record. First time I've seen it. Peter is a bit of a douche, like you say, but he's our douche. I love him. So that's called a winning trip to the record store, man. You're 5 for 5, man, you know?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, all five, except for the Parliament Mother Connection, I didn't know any of these. I like them, man. I love the Hawkwind record. I love the Berlin record, man. You know, everything else is pretty darn good. Pete, I don't know. Good trip to the record store. So what else is going on with you?
Oh, I got a big bag of cookies here.
All right, I got something else for you.
All right, what do you got?
Started reading Bruce's book. Bruce's autobiography that came out about a year ago, Born to Run, which I'm stunned, frankly, that you've never started, never read that.
I have no desire to read Bruce's book
that
for some
reason. That boggles
my
mind. Yeah. You're the biggest Bruce fan.
Well, I
know.
Had
He's
it,
one on
again, I had it in my hands, and I spent about a half hour with it in the bookstore. And with me, again, I don't care about your childhood. I don't care about what your grandfather did. I want to get into the work. I want to know about the songs. I want to know about your creative process. I want to know about your what was going on Bruce's tours. I want to know about the River Tour. I want to know what was going through his mind in those last months of 1980 when his set list were going up. It was going up to 38 songs, you know, and he was totally pushing the envelope and just knocking himself out on stage, man. And you know, so the first thing I do is I go to the River Tour and just minimal stuff, just basic minimal stuff, the things that I look for in an artist, man, writing about themselves,
right,
is not the usual stuff that you get in a in an autobiography, man. So unless it's very specific to what my criteria is for an autobiography, I have very little interest in it.
And you know, checked out that section of the book.
And I checked out all of the little things that I wanted to hear Bruce talk about. And he just didn't go there. He just did not go in places where I kind of hoped he would go.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's not well written. It's brilliant. From what I hear on E Street Radio and there's little snippets of it, I mean, I've heard a lot of it in Bruce's own voice.
Yeah.
And one day I will pick it up and read it.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
But again, it's just kind of not at the top of my list.
Right.
You know? I don't know.
Very surprised, man. I know you're not. You always
the
say
reason,
you're not.
And the reason Stick is surprised, for those of you who don't know me personally, I am a hardcore Springsteen fan.
Hardcore, man.
Hardcore. But I am also a big critic of Bruce. So I'm not knee-jerk with Springsteen. There are just certain things that's not for me. And like I said, I will read his book at some point. It's just not, you know, it's not my first priority right now.
You've always said you're not interested in people's childhood. It says, I mean, Bruce is your guy. You know, when it gets
I don't care about life stories. I'm more interested in artists, the work that artists do.
Sure.
I don't want to know their, I don't want to know them as a person, man. You know, I don't want to know what. Although, you know, you do get a sense of what makes him tick.
Yeah.
But, again, just knowing Bruce's work, you kind of already have a sense of that.
Yeah.
Just through his work. Mm-hmm. Through the things he says on stage and his relationship with the audience over the years. And those long, drawn-out monologues on stage in between songs that go way back to 1975.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good sense of who Bruce Springsteen was, even before that book came out.
True. True. He gets a lot of the stuff he talks about on stage is there in a book. You know, him turning on the light late at night, and there's his dad sitting in the dark smoking a cigarette at the kitchen table.
Yeah,
like a
creep. And that story has gone back to 1975. He used to tell that story. That was his you know, the going into where he would do the animals, It's My Life, in 75. And he would lead up to that song with that story. In 78, he would lead up to Factory with that same story. In 1980, he would lead up to Independence Day with that same story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then a different variation of that story reached the River in 19 when he was doing it on the Born in the USA tour in 85. So you could hear these different variations of that story and his relationship with his father.
Yeah.
All across his entire career, it's there. It's always well documented through his music, through his onstage monologues.
That's what we love about him.
But yeah, I mean, the book is getting it's gotten. I mean, the book is out over a year. It's about a year now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I will pick it up one day.
Yeah, I'll give you mine. I'm done. I'm about a third of the way through it now.
Yeah.
This is about 2 weeks ago, man. I cracked it literally that morning. I'm laying at my morning coffee and I cracked the Springsteen book. Got about 10 pages into it. At any rate, that day we had a party to go to down Point Pleasant, New Jersey. You know, we're down Point Pleasant, driving home now, and spontaneously, I'm like, you know what? 87 Randolph Street. You know, I was like,
wow.
I got, yeah, I remember.
So did you go there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like,
you were talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were talking about that.
We were talking about this like 2 years ago. We gotta go to. So I sit in a call. Like, you know what? Get the fucking GPS out, man. Like, I see the Freehold exit coming up, like 87 Randolph Street. You know. We're getting close. Turn left on Randolph Street. You know, I turn left, and the excitement is building, dude. Right? It's like fucking 93, like 91. And we finally get to 87, and whoop, there's nothing there, dude. There's a fucking empty lot. Mm. They fucking demolished his house, dude. There's a parking lot with a church in the fucking back. Mm. And my reaction was like, fuck, dude. Like, I felt like totally ripped off. Like, what the fuck, dude? I yelled, you know? Felt totally ripped off, dude. So, the funny part is, dude, like, the very next morning, I opened the book again. If I had just read one more page, boop, and the very next page, Bruce says, oh, they demolished my childhood house. The Saint, it was
it's funny.
Saint Rose of Lima, for the Saint Rose of Lima Church, you know, yeah. Like, right there. And, of course,
that was his school.
Yeah.
He went to that
right.
school.
Right. He did go to that school. Yeah, and had horrible experiences with the priests and whatnot. As it turns out, he had three different houses. Yeah. There in Freehold, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, I guess you could visit the other houses. Apparently there's a tree that's in the Born in USA, in the sleeve of Born in USA. Like, a lot of tourists to this day will stop and pose next to this tree or something.
Oh, okay. I know
or
what
is
you're
it
talking
in the,
about.
Or is it in the, no, in the tour
there
book?
No, there is a sleeve. I think it's a sleeve on one side of the Born in USA cover. Not the cover, but inside.
Right. But that's my anticlimactic ending. I was really, really looking forward to. I had it all planned out. All right, I was telling Nicole, all right, you're going to take pictures of me next to the house. Go post it on Facebook, right? This is me next to Bruce's house. Couldn't wait to show everybody, right? Me standing in front of Bruce's house. That's how that happened. But ain't it fucking weird, though, that the town of Freehold doesn't have anything like home of Bruce Springsteen, man? The world's biggest motherfucking superstar in a town has nothing to recognize or appreciate their first son, man. They should capitalize on Bruce's name a little bit in Freehold, you know? Same thing with Hibbing, with Dylan, man. There's one little fucking cafe called Zimmy's Place, and that's all there is to recognize Dylan. You'd never know Bob Dylan came from this town. Weird.
I guess they don't figure enough people go into that town other than the people that live there. So, I mean, I don't know. I can't see anybody making a pilgrimage out the Freehold. Just like in large numbers, the way maybe they do. I would think that more people try to go to his house in Rumson or Colts Neck,
right,
and drive around there to see where Bruce currently lives, as opposed to, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's what Nicole said. She'd rather see the place in Rumson. I'd rather see where he lives now. I was going, I'd rather see his childhood house. I don't know. If I had his Rumson address, I probably would have tried that too, man. But I didn't.
I know he's selling one of his houses. I don't know if the one in Rumson or the one in Colts Neck.
Does he have a house in Hollywood still?
I don't think he does. I don't think he does. I mean, but you know, you never know with these people, man. They have so much fucking money, man, that they probably have houses everywhere. You know, I know he doesn't live on the West Coast anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, he doesn't?
No. He moved back in the 90s.
Ah. Yeah, the low point of his career, man, when he came out with those two albums at a time.
Yeah, Bruce, Hollywood Bruce, L.A.
Yeah,
Bruce.
He moved out to Hollywood, everything. What happened to Bruce? Like, we just lost him, you know?
Yeah. Remember they booed him, man, when we were there on opening night in 92, the start of the tour. And he's like, yeah, he was introduced in my hometown. He's like, yeah, I wrote this song 10 years ago out in L.A. I was out in L.A. And as soon as he said it, man, everybody started to boo. He's all right. This is his first time coming back to Jersey after moving out. And he's like, all right, everybody's got this beef with me. Let's get it off your chest. Mm-hmm. I could take it. And he stood there and 20,000 people just stood up and booed.
This is the same tour also where he didn't have the E Street Band, right?
That was that tour, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 92, 93.
Too much too soon. He releases these two records, which really should have been one. Right?
Yeah.
Moves out to fucking Hollywood. Gets rid of the E Street Band. Yeah. The fans couldn't handle all that. Too much change too quick.
Yeah.
You know? And for a frightening minute, it did look like the songwriting was suffering.
Yeah,
man.
You know, I wouldn't say that it was too much too quick, because if you remember, Bruce lets go of the E Street Band in 1989. and we go 3 or 4 years without an album. So there's 89, there was no album. 90, there was no album. 91, there was no album. And then 92, he releases two. So there was that big gap where, like, where is Bruce Springsteen? You know, there's grunge now. What's Bruce, you know? And so he was, like, almost irrelevant to the big picture when those albums came out.
Yeah, grunge did that, man.
You know, he still sold out multiple nights in massive venues, which he always did and always will. But it was the, it was like you said, it was the low point of his career.
I remember, dude, you loved Human Touch and Lucky Town, though.
I didn't. I loved Lucky Town.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't crazy about Human Touch.
Yeah.
There were songs on Human Touch that I liked.
Right.
But it was, again, it was just too fat. It was just too big, too much filler.
Mm-hmm.
Just cringe-worthy songs, man.
Couple
just of some of the most cringe-inducing, just diarrhea that he's ever produced.
Why put it out, man? He didn't, I don't know.
Songs like Real Man.
And right, make one just, brilliant record.
It just sounded like something that, like came out of Phil Collins' ass, and even Phil Collins wouldn't release. You know?
I'm just trying to think what he was thinking, dude. You know, he did have enough material for a great record. Why put out two substandard ones? Obviously, he didn't have that opinion, or else he wouldn't have done it.
Listen, to Real Man. If anybody wants to hear the absolute most cringeworthy, cheesy song that Bruce ever wrote, is called Real Man. It just it's like that Phil Collins Susudio sound,
really?
Man. Yeah.
You know what? I have the record. I'm not placing that song right now. I guess there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
That's a good topic, too. The worst song from our favorite
artist. The worst songs from our favorite artist. Yeah.
Well, Mike, should we put you to bed? You're not doing too well.
I'm on life support here.
Yeah. Should we bid the listeners fondue? Thanks for hanging in there with us. Sans Pat, we did the best we can without our guy.
Yeah, we're Rock Under Fire, and we are a rock and roll podcast, and we... Sometime, well, fuck this. I don't want to do this.
Keep on supporting us, guys. Hang in there.